welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone, and this is your host, Veronica Monet. We've got a very interesting topic today. We're going to be talking about sex and the middle-aged man. Now, you know, actually it's interesting because I think usually what I hear about in the media is sex and the middle-aged woman. Women get all the attention. Well, today we're going to talk about men, and specifically we're going to talk about single men, and particularly for men who are re-entering the dating world. You know, if you've been married for 10, 20 years and then you get a divorce, it's a whole new brave world out there. You got the online dating and, oh, Twittering and Facebook and, oh my God, it can just get really, really confusing. Anyway, to help me navigate this discussion, I mean, I'm not a middle-aged man, so it'd kind of be silly for me to sit here and tell you about it, but my friend Patrick Gann is going to be joining us, and let me read you just a little bit about his bio. He's 52 years old. He's recently single, divorced his wife, or actually I should say separated from his wife in July 2006, and he considers that he's on a brand new journey into sexual discovery for middle-aged single men. We want to hear more about that. So, you know, I like his attitude. He's taking this as an adventure. And he also wants you to know that he writes poetry. In particular, he likes to write erotic poems in the alternative sexual scene. And two of his poems have been featured in A Taste of Sex, Erotic Poetry Readings, which can be heard on Personal Life Media. I know for a fact that he was doing some stand-up poetry over at One Taste there in San Francisco down on Folsom Street. So you might have actually seen him or heard him at some point. Patrick, thanks for your patience, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Veronica.
Very nice to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It was a beautiful day here in San Francisco until about a half hour ago.
Yeah, what's up with that, man? Tell me what's going on.
The clouds are coming in.
Oh, no. That's not good. That's not good at all. I'm going to church tomorrow, believe it or not.
Oh, that's great.
I just recently started attending the Unitarian Universalist Church, and they're having a blessing of the animals tomorrow, and I'm going because my dog just had surgery and has been diagnosed with cancer. So,
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm really sorry, too, and it's costing me an arm and a leg. But you know what? There's a lot of beautiful people out there who have pitched in, and, you know, there's charitable organizations like United Animal Nation and Sammy's Friends. Those people have, you know, I've never even met these people, and they make contributions. But then there's my good, close friends, you know, just my neighbor, and it's amazing. You get to really find out who your friends are when you're in a tight spot like this.
That's very true.
Yeah, but hopefully the minister has some beautiful blessing to offer Blanco tomorrow, and I hope it doesn't rain on us. Apparently, all kinds of animals are going to be coming out for this blessing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
you know, great. So, I mean, it's weird that you know, you and I a lot of times appear to be on the same wavelength, because I've been also giving a lot of consideration to joining the Unitarian Universalist Church. So it's uncanny that you're starting down that path.
Well, you know, I think maybe we're like brother sister. We just don't know it or something, because you know, we're both Aries. You know, we're both clean and sober. And,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot in common.
Yeah, we do.
But I am not a 52-year-old recently separated man. So I'd love for you to tell us about this. And are you actually divorced or just separated?
I am still married, but separated. We each have our own lives. And my wife has a lot of chronic pain and isn't able to work, so we're still married so that she can benefit from my health insurance.
Ah, okay. I see.
Yeah. But
does that kind of cramp your dating life?
Not at all. Not at all. Tell us about that. Well, you want me to go back to when we separated, or?
Let's talk about right now. What does dating?
Well, right now I've been in a relationship with a younger woman since the end of February of this year, and
she knows you're still married.
Oh, she knows. One thing that I learned coming out of that relationship and through work is the most important thing in dating in the early part of the relationship is just complete honesty. And so when we first met and we're talking about each other, I disclosed everything about me. And there's always that fear that, you know, the woman may say, well, gosh, you're weird, or no thanks, or whatever. But because I was able to do that and she was also able to do that, there's no hidden things in a closet or anything. So she was concerned whether I really was separated in terms of, you know, our lives. And I assured her I am. You know, my current wife and I still have some dealings financially, and you know, when we have to talk, we talk, but otherwise our lives are separate.
Well, yeah, I would imagine that it would kind of evoke some fear in a woman that maybe you're planning on going back at some point, or you haven't really, you know, whatever.
Well, I guaranteed her and that won't be happening. So
yeah.
I will not be going back.
Yeah. Okay. That relationship, I take it, was a really unsatisfactory one. So you.
Yeah. Yeah. We were together since '95. We got married in '99, and in the last five, we got separated in July of 2006. And in the last 5 years, I can count literally on less than two hands the number of times we had sex.
That ought to be a crime. No.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, when I get married, I take my vow seriously, and so I had committed to monogamy, and I was monogamous all through that time.
Wow.
But certainly when we separated, I just decided that my fear was when we separated is, oh my heavens, I'm really past my male peak. Because at that time I would have been, about 49. And so I was scared that, you know, some of the best years of my sexual self had gone by. And that was very frightening to think of. So,
I take it that wasn't the case.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
So when we got
a good. This is like a good news, bad news kind of thing?
Well, it is.
I like my bad news first. So what's the bad news about being a recently separated and middle-aged man?
Well, again, since I had very little sex, what I found is that I wasn't able to get an erection regularly, and I had a lot of trouble reaching an orgasm. So from that point of view, that's why I was just really scared that, well, I'm grieving over this. You know, does this mean that the way that I used to enjoy sex and what sex meant to me in terms of being with a woman, was that over? And the journey from my separation was, after I separated, I was in individual therapy, and I decided to see an escort, and because I didn't want to date. I mean, I was you know, very injured, so to speak, from my separation. I had no desire whatsoever to have a relationship with somebody. And again, I'm not the type of person to just go out, meet a woman, go home, you know, and pretend that I'm interested in her. So I really didn't want any of that. And so I went online, I found an escort, and several visits, and that's when I found I was taking antidepressants, some SSRIs, and I just found that I was not able. Sometimes I would get an erection, sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes I could have an orgasm, a lot of times I couldn't. And
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Just curious, as a sexologist, when you masturbate, do you have any problems with an erection?
Sometimes I did, especially back then because of the SSRIs.
Okay.
And
right.
And that again was hope. Go ahead.
Some of it was physiological then. Now, are you still on the antidepressants?
I'm on a different antidepressant. Fortunately, the therapist that I see, she deals in sexual issues. But that isn't why I sought her out. It's just that she has that specialty. So,
right.
As she said, just because you're on antidepressants doesn't mean that you should have to give up your sex life. And she put me in touch with a psychiatrist, and we tried some different medications and eventually came upon one, 12-Butrin. Which does not have the side effect that an SSRI has. And an SSRI is not only a side effect for men, it's also a side effect for women in terms of being able to reach an orgasm. So while I could, you know, there were times when literally I would, you know, try to masturbate and I couldn't. And more often than not, when I was able to get an erection while masturbating, it was work to try to have an orgasm. You know,
I've seen this firsthand in men, men that I was having a personal relationship with, as well as professional relationships. But I've seen it in the past. And it's amazing because the man can just go if he's able to achieve an erection, but he can never, experience any, culmination to that. It just goes on and on and on. He's on the plateau stage forever.
Oh, I know. And if you can picture a Rolodex of fantasies, you know, it's like my Rolodex would just be spinning wildly, you know, trying to go across all the fantasies I could think of and, until it finally latched on one, so to speak. So, you know, it was very unsatisfying, you know, and the whole thing I was caught up with was orgasm. Okay, you masturbate, you have an orgasm. You have sex with a woman, you have an orgasm. It was very orgasm focused. And the way that I kind of migrated from that is I was with a friend and I mentioned to her that I was touch starved. And she referred me to a masseuse who does sensual massages. And it was part of that process that I learned to get away from that mindset. And frankly, Veronica, working with you also helped me tremendously in terms of getting away from that mindset of orgasm. Yeah. I mean, sex equals orgasm.
I've introduced some of the concepts of Tantra and, certainly, I think, just talking about alternative sexuality is trying to create an atmosphere where we can release ourselves from shame and move in the direction of embracing our journey. Because, sex is a journey. It's not like
That's right.
you stay one way for the rest of your life, nor should you.
Right. Well, and on your website, there's actually an article that you wrote, and it had to do with can men have multiple orgasms. And that article was so helpful to me. I mean, especially, aside from the coaching that you did with me, is coming upon that article was so helpful because, again, it really addressed this idea of you don't have to have an ejaculation to have an orgasm. And that's very true in my discovery. So anyway, I want to get back to this masseuse. So I started seeing this, masseuse and it was all about sensual massage. So she's nude and I'm nude. There's no sex. And she uses her whole body to massage my body. And the first time I went and saw her, I was, uptight, cause the first time I'd seen her, I was nude and, what if I got an erection, that kind of thing.
Right.
And the second time I saw her, this thought just popped into my mind. And it said, I'm not going to worry about an orgasm. I'm not going to worry about getting an erection. I am only going to focus on the touch in the complete, in the present moment of that touch, and that's all I focused on. And if thoughts started coming into my mind, you know, taking my attention, you know, when I realized that was happening, I would just let the thought pass through my mind. I didn't try to hold on to it. And I would refocus on the touch and on what she was doing to my body. And then we progressed, and then we started again, the focus wasn't sex in terms of let's have an orgasm, but there was a lot of erotic touching. And what I found is with that, I wouldn't have an erection, but I would have an orgasm. And it wasn't an ejaculation. My body would respond in terms of shuddering and the shaking, just like as if I had had an orgasm. And I was able to have multiple orgasms in that manner. And I would leave her studio after an hour and a half, and I would feel so much more invigorated, had so much more energy, felt so much more peaceful than if I had gone in, had sex, and had a traditional orgasm. And that was really the start of my awakening into this realm of there is an alternative way for men to experience their sexuality and the touching and the erotic touching and having this kind of a whole body orgasm. I mean, there were times when I would just shudder uncontrollably and moan. It was exactly like if I'd had a traditional orgasm. It just blew my mind. And so I saw her about every 2 weeks, and it changed my life. It truly changed my life.
If you would, just pause for a minute there, because first of all, I want to tell our listeners that obviously you were tapping into a lot of what a lot of people call tantric sexuality.
Yes.
I was just at a
but I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was doing that.
Just having dinner with some tantric people a couple of nights ago, and there was a big discussion about what is tantra, what isn't tantra. So for those who are listening and saying, that's not tantra, I don't really care. I'm not interested in getting into those kind of esoteric discussions. The point being, whether you call it tantra, sacred sex, conscious breathing, meditative sex, you can hang any label you want on it, but it's really about tapping into our breath.
Yes.
And that in the breath, we get connected to our body and our emotions and our spirit, and that's actually where orgasms take place anyway. Yes, there is accumulation of blood in the tissues of our body, but that is just one type of orgasm. You can have a fire breath orgasm, which is it doesn't have anything to do with muscles or blood vessels. It's just the electrical energy that's inside you, which can be activated by breathing. And wouldn't you agree that those type of orgasms are actually a little more mind expanding?
They are. Absolutely. No, I like regular orgasms too, but I'm not hung up on it. And what you talked about breathing is very important. Not only the breathing, but with men, it's when they're trying to have an orgasm, they just tense up. You can just see the muscles just tensing, and they're holding their breath, and that's actually counterproductive. When I was with this person, I would just relax all my muscles. I would go limp. I would relax them, and then I would breathe regularly. And if she noticed that I was starting to hold my breath, she would say, breathe. And so the breath work and the relaxing of muscles really is a key in order to, experience the touching and the pleasure.
It is, and it's interesting because, you know, most of us have had some kind of sexual experience before we got born, which is really difficult for people to wrap their minds around because we're basically told that babies aren't sexual, and nothing could be further from the truth because both male and female babies are masturbating in the womb.
Right.
So, and the birth experience is actually a very sexual experience, and it can be an orgasmic experience for the birthing mother, especially if she invites that and isn't shame-based. And so then that becomes the natural painkiller, so that you don't necessarily need to have painkillers. And there's actually, for those who are listening, you might want to check out The Orgasmic Birth, The Orgasmic Birth online. I'll Twitter that to you, too. But it's amazing to watch these videos with these husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, heterosexual couples who are getting ready to have their baby. I didn't actually see any lesbian couples, but anyway, the smiles and all this peace on their faces, and they too are inviting the breath. So it seems like one of the things that, you know, our response to fear is to clench. And,
right.
You know, whether you are trying to pass a baby through your vaginal canal, or you're trying to achieve an erection, or you're trying to have an orgasm, or you know, you're just trying to play a sport very well, the first impulse that we all have is to hold our breath. And I can tell you this, even as a marksman, you know, in firing weapons, we want to hold our breath. This is what human beings do when they're
right.
afraid or tense or trying to focus. And it's exactly the wrong thing to do. If
right.
you're trying to learn how to play a sport, you've got to breathe into it. If you're trying to learn how to be a good marksman, you have to breathe into it. If you're trying to connect with your sexuality, you got to breathe into it. And apparently, if you want to have an orgasmic birth, you have to breathe
right.
into it.
Right.
So one of the things I like to say is that, you know, the first thing we do when we arrive on planet Earth, well, the first thing we do when we leave our mom's bodies is we take a breath of air. And the last thing that we do when we get ready to leave, you know, the day we die, is we take a breath. And pretty much all the breaths that we take in between that first breath and that last breath, we could work on them. Because most people are using the upper portion of their lungs. They're not even using their full lung capacity. And people are not breathing down into their bellies. They're not connecting with their bodies. And if you watch animals, you will see that they are breathing deeply and contracting their PC muscles, the pubococcygeal muscles. Those are the same muscles that, you know, cause us to stop and start a flow of urine. It's the muscles that also wag your dog's tail. They contract their PC muscles and breathe just naturally. And I suspect that we would, too, if we had not been shamed out of our bodies at such an early age.
Right. And one thing that I would add in terms of the breathing, when I mentioned, you know, the importance of relaxing your muscles, a lot of that is accomplished through the breathing, and not just the intake of a deep breath, but when you exhale, and you exhale completely, your muscles relax. And so it's that breathing exercise and the exhaling. That was the technique that I learned in terms of being able to relax my muscles and not have any clenching or tightening whatsoever.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, of course, you can also, if you learn to contract your PC muscles when you're breathing, but, again, that's like we're not tensing the body. We're contracting a particular muscle group and then relaxing
right.
it and contracting it and relaxing it.
Right.
And for sexual abuse survivors, too, a really important technique, this is actually something Stacey Haynes talks about in her book, The Survivor's Guide to Sex, where we move the pelvis around so that we increase blood flow. When you are able to move your body, you actually increase blood flow, and then you get it oxygenated, and things work better that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, very important. So, anyway, tell us a little bit more about this journey here. So, at first, you started us off with, you know, kind of a bad news here. I can't get an erection. And then you start telling us about these mind-blowing tantric orgasms that you're having without
right.
an erection.
Right. Well, there's also a middle period between the, you know, the frustration and then the mind-blowing orgasm without, you know, an erection. I had mentioned before that I was on antidepressants. And before I got onto this different medication, I decided, Viagra should do the trick. And what I learned with Viagra is that sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. So again, you know, when it didn't work, just a lot of frustration. Fortunately, I've always been a very sensual person. And so if I was with an escort, and I didn't play the field of escorts. I basically, you know, had one or two that I would visit, regularly. But when I was with the woman, there was a lot of kissing, a lot of touching, soft touching. Fortunately, I really enjoy giving oral sex. And so I was still able, even before I met this masseuse, I was still able to give pleasure to the woman. And, you know, for my ego, that helped a lot, is the fact that she was getting pleasure, you know, from my efforts. So the other thing
if I might add, Patrick, too,
yeah.
it's not just our ego, it's our natural need to connect.
Oh no, absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually it was one of these escorts that referred me to this masseuse because she knew just from the amount of touching and running my hands over her body and when we were, you know, out to dinner or whatever, I always was reaching over to hold her hand and that's when I mentioned when I was touch starved that, you know, she said, well, you should really see this person. So you're right. It's the desire to connect, to touch and be touched.
Well, yes, and that just, of course, has a little bit of ego, especially I think for men, because you know you're kind of performance oriented, at least because of the culture, kind of
right.
trained to be that way. If you're not naturally that way,
you right,
want to show off and perform for us, which I think is one of the more endearing traits of men. It is. I don't think we give enough appreciation to that, you know.
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
But okay, so anyway,
yeah.
What would you say is the best part then about being a middle-aged man who's back on the dating scene? What's the best part of that?
The best part was really just learning having a whole different mindset. The fact that I wasn't able to have sex in the way that I'd had it before. And then just going through that discovery, that rediscovery, that was the best part. And so, you know, I was really fortunate that taking, you know, a situation that, easily could have caused depression, easily, you know, could have caused a lot of anger, you know, the fact that, again, a lot of this was through connections with various people to meet someone and then just discover this whole realm of touch. And there were times, again with this masseuse, there were times when I would give her, a massage. Now I'm not licensed, and I don't know a lot of techniques, but again, it was just the touch and there's very different erogenous zones. So, if someone isn't ticklish on their feet, the feet is an incredible erogenous zone. And massaging the feet and then, you know, just light touching on the soles. It's very erotic. And then just working up the legs and then going up to the breast. So, it's the power of touch cannot be overemphasized.
It
really can't be.
It seems like in some ways you've had an awakening to where maybe before sex and connection with your partner was really about your penis and her vagina, and now it's like you are exploring the entire body and the person attached to the body and the energy in the body and between the bodies.
Right.
Does that resonate with you?
Oh, absolutely. Because through my touch, I would be able to detect the energy in the woman. And I paid very close attention to her breathing. I paid very close attention to her muscles and how they were responding. And my touch would conform with the signals that I was getting back through her body. And again, it's just fortunate that I am a sensualist. I mean, that's just my nature. But you know, in the past, I mean, when I was in my 20s and 30s and when I was married, you know, it was like, well, I have sex to have an orgasm, you know. The other thing that I would say is because it was difficult to have an orgasm, especially with my wife, she had chronic pain, but, you know, I would be always worried about, you know, was I tiring out the woman, in terms of intercourse and this feeling that, okay, I gotta hurry up and have the orgasm. I gotta hurry up and have the orgasm. And that added a lot of stress too. So the way I approach intercourse these days is it's just another manner of expressing sexuality. It feels very good, very pleasant, but I'm not focused on having an orgasm, not one single bit.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I was working as an escort, I would get men who had erectile dysfunction, and one of the games I used to play with them is I would tell them, I want you to try not to have an erection. And they would start laughing, and as soon as they started laughing, the blood would start flowing to their penis again.
Right.
And it was just basically like, you know, stop worrying about it. In the act of worrying about it, you actually make it worse.
Right.
You know, of course there's outside factors. There's diabetes and heart disease and psychotropic drugs.
Right.
And testosterone levels and you know, some men have too much estrogen and these things can all mediate one's erection. But for a lot of men, you know, they don't really have a physiological problem. They just have an emotional problem.
Right, exactly.
They're kind of rushing into sex with a stranger thinking that their penis is supposed to perform.
Right.
And then when it doesn't, they get mad at it like they might get mad at a car that doesn't start.
Yep.
And so they're not only not connecting emotionally with their lover's bodies, but they're not connecting emotionally with their own body. They want to flip a switch and have it work, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, that's that whole, you know, everybody wants a remote control and a pill nowadays.
That's right. Hurry up. We live in the world of hurry up.
And one of the things I try to tell people as they're getting older, of course, is that, you know, our bodies do change. And some of us, our bodies change more than others. We're all very different. Some women will have go through menopause and be so excited about the fact that they don't have to worry about getting pregnant anymore that their body actually functions better than it did before menopause, and they will have more lubrication and more fantastic sexual intercourse. And then for other women, you know, the walls to the vagina get a little thin. You know, intercourse can become a little bit painful. There's less lubrication. And the same thing with men. I've met men well into their 80s that have no problem achieving a rock hard erection that would make a 20-year-old's blush, you know. But for, you know, plenty of men, the equipment doesn't necessarily always have as much blood flow as it did when they were 17. And I think our bodies invite us to take this journey that is sex and learn new things as our bodies change. And certainly this is absolutely true for people who wind up having medical issues or physical limitations because of accidents or health, you know. So, for instance, I have had clients who were disabled and perhaps in a wheelchair. And they absolutely know that they have to learn how to eroticize body parts they never thought were erotic, you know, maybe earlobes or the neck or something like that if they're quadriplegic or you know, and again, I have met quadriplegics who are able to have a sensation in their genitals and quadriplegics who can't.
So,
like I said, we're all different. But, I think our spiritual path also invites us to, you know, to take these new journeys into sex and explore new ways of connecting with human beings. I think really, you know, yes, orgasms, I love them. I think they're really, really healthy and wonderful. But, you know, sex is also about connection.
It certainly is. And what I enjoy now is, I call it just sensually based lovemaking. It's making love to the entire body and mind of the woman. It's not just focused on the genitals. As a matter of fact, most of the time that I'm with my girlfriend is not about genital touching. It's about just stroking, running my hand and my fingers, giving nice massages while we're lying face to face with each other, and I'm kind of massaging her back. And one technique I learned from this masseuse is, you know, when you're giving a massage or you're touching or whatever, never let your hand leave the woman's body. Never pick it up. Always move it so that it doesn't have to be the same hand, but that there is always some contact between the man and the woman. Because when you pick your hand up, it just breaks that connection when you bring it up. So that's just a technique that I learned. It's been very valuable.
Very nice. Now,
yeah.
So I know you're seeing somebody exclusively right now, but
right.
what about when you first started dating? Can we talk about that a little bit? Did you do the online thing or,
Well, I did. I mean, I did the on, well, I didn't do online dating. But what I had done, because again, I did not want to date at that time. And so when I was actually ready, and was thinking, okay, I think I'm ready to start having a relationship, a steady relationship. I wrote out a profile. I mean, this is uncanny. So I said that I met my girlfriend at the end of February. So at the beginning of February, I was on this dating site, and I'm a businessman. And so, I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to use a small dating site to hone my profile and how I word it and test to see, what kind of responses I get. But I wrote this profile, and one of the questions was, describe your ideal mate. And so I describe my ideal mate, kindness, compassion, non-judgmental, likes sex, likes baseball, likes to hike, likes to go on really long drives. And what was uncanny is by doing that, then when I met up with my girlfriend, actually she asked me out, as we started dating, I found myself going back to that profile and just doing, okay, check mark, check mark, check mark. And there came a point where I realized to myself, I think I've checked everything off of what I want in an ideal mate. And I went back to the profile and I looked at it, and it was 100% match. I mean, it was just kind of uncanny on that. But having that ideal, having a picture of what you want, the ideal mate, you're more apt to get what you want because you're actually able to sit down and define it. And so I found that very helpful. But in terms of dating, I'm actually a pretty shy person when it comes to meeting women. We both worked on this nonprofit board. I was in the kitchen cleaning up some stuff, and she came in and, hemmed and hawed and all that. And then she looked at me and said, so, how would you feel about going out with me? And, she's 28 years old and I'm 52. And, the first thought that went through my mind was, well, gosh, if any woman has that kind of courage, I'm going to go out with them. Seriously, I would. I love going out with people. Say what?
That is a big age difference. You got it.
Yeah.
What are we talking about there? 22 years or 20?
Oh yeah. 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 It's 24 years.
24 years. You can tell math is not my thing.
No, that's fine. But it's funny, as I began to tell people, hey, I have a girlfriend, and they would say, how old? I would say, you know, well, because they knew my age, I would say, well, she's 28. And then I would quickly add, she asked me out first, so I wasn't robbing the cradle. So again, in terms of meeting, it was, again, one thing I've learned through recovery is, I have to be brutally honest, not unkindly honest, but brutally in terms of, you know, I cannot keep secrets. I can have discretion, but I can't keep secrets. And so, I was on our first date, basically, where we were just sitting down and talking, and she disclosed some things about herself, and then I told her, I said, here I am. You know, I told her everything that I did. I talked about the escorts. I talked about the fact that I was not interested in monogamy. I told her all of that. And so by doing, you know, she made the decision, okay, well, I still want to date, you know, and based on what she told me, I still wanted to date her. And it took all the pressure off of the relationship by being that honest.
This is a very, you know, a worthwhile thing to talk about, too, which I think, again, like, just because you maybe were married for 10, 20 years doesn't necessarily mean you want to turn around and get married for another 10, 20 years.
Right.
And it seems like the model that we have in society right now is basically like you either get married again or you'll stay single again, but the idea that you could delve into a whole new lifestyle, like being polyamorous, which is basically
yes.
what you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you define it as polyamory or an open relationship, but the idea that you don't have to have your relationship doesn't have to conform to, you know, the accepted standards. You could actually, at 52, you could actually chart your own course and choose what makes you happy.
And that's what I did. Now, what was interesting, so before I met my girlfriend, I, you know, again, had been working with this masseuse and, you know, having this rediscovery. And what I found out is when my girlfriend and I started having sex, I regressed. And so it would be the first time we had intercourse. It's like, oh, I gotta hang on to an erection here. I mean, what's she gonna think if I can't keep an erection? Oh, I gotta have an orgasm. And I actually had to retrain myself with my girlfriend, to get back to the point of no, orgasm isn't the focus. What is the focus is giving and receiving pleasure. And so now, I mean, she, trust me, one thing, men have to be careful what they ask for, because, you know, some guys in their middle 50s may say, oh yeah, I want a 28-year-old woman. And it happens that my girlfriend has a very high sex drive. But I don't have that high of a sex drive, but I do make sure that I, you know, that I satisfy her sex drive. Well, I mean,
we've got a comment here coming off of Facebook. Roy Turpin.
Uh-oh.
The question that I posted was, has sex changed now that you are a middle-aged man? And Roy Turpin says, you know it. I am way more embodied, and I have the benefit of years of erotic training from gay men and lesbians. My lovers are happier, and my clients certainly smile more brightly. Sounds like a really happy guy.
Yep.
I think maybe this is, you know, one of the things that we're exploring today is this idea that somehow or another sex is for younger people or that sex is just one thing. But, you know,
right.
You know, opening ourselves up to the journey and expanding it, you know, and yeah, why not learn from your gay men and lesbians? Why not?
Oh, absolutely. And again,
you know,
coming.
And conversely, if you happen to be gay or lesbian, you could learn a few things from your straight friends. Maybe. I know that might be pushing it, but.
Well, but also coming off of my separation, I did a lot of exploration about my sexuality. And, you had mentioned One Taste before, and so I went and did some seminars there, which were very helpful. But basically I said, you know, I'd always had a bisexual streak, which I hadn't realized. I kind of repressed it. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm going to see what that's about. And so I tried it. I liked it. you know, I also had an experience where I was watching a movie with again an escort of mine, and it's called The Secretary, and it's about dominance and submission. And so at the end of it, she said, "Well, how do you like it?" I said, "I really like it, but I'm not into pain." You know, and then before I knew it, you know, it was my birthday night, and she used a flogger on me, and it was like, wow. Holy smokes! And that was so erotic. I mean, the endorphins going off. So when you talk about women going through childbirth, you know, and just the release of those endorphins, you know, it's obviously I haven't given childbirth, so I obviously cannot speak on it from experience, but.
But you understand the concept.
Oh, I understand the concept.
And this is something I want to bring home for our listeners here. That one of the reasons, you know, we talk about BDSM, and it may be very, very confusing if you're not into it or if you never experimented with it. Why would people want to hurt? You know, there's so much pain in the world anyway. Why would you want to go in search of pain? And it really is just about the chemistry of the body and the fact, of course, that we're all just constructed a little bit different. So I used to offer something I'd call BDSM 101. My clients mm-hmm. would come to see me, and they didn't know if they were into BDSM, and I'd just give them a good hard whack on their ring. And they either went limp or they went hard.
Uh-huh.
And I, based upon that alone, a lot of times I could help people determine whether or not they should even bother to pursue it and, you know, explore it further. And,
well, what's interesting is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, anyway, so the idea is that, first of all, we're not all created the same. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, what might turn somebody else on, you know, isn't necessarily going to turn on everybody. That's one of the great things about being, you know, diverse individuals. However, just across the board, the body is constructed so that it releases these opiate-like compounds. They're very much like heroin, and they can be just as addictive, in fact. And it is the body's response to pain. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons we went and invented all these narcotics and whatnot, is because, you know, the body actually does some of that on its own. And so we're just trying to emulate that when we take a pain pill. And
right.
And for those of us that are clean and sober, BDSM becomes like one of the few legal highs you have left.
right.
You know,
right.
You can inflict a little bit of pain and get enormously high.
Right. You know, you mentioned something with your clients where you would do the 101 and you'd whack them and, you know, if they got hard or limp. At least in my experience is I did not get sexual arousal from it. But it was, and let me see how I would describe it. It was, I bonded with a dominatrix, and, it wasn't sexual, but I definitely went into, you know, a zone where the endorphins were released. And like you said, I mean, it was like, man, this is like an opiate. And it was, you know, that and going into the zone is the enjoyment that I get out of it. I don't get erections or anything else. I mean, it's the endorphins. And then what it does to my mind is that I'm giving up all control. And I'm basically, you know, the woman's, I mean, I would do anything that she asked me to do. If somebody came through the door after, you know, the first time that I did it, if somebody come through the door after the woman that I was, I would have fought that guy to the death. That's exactly the mind space that I was in. So it's funny how, you know, it just, at least for me, it just changes. It changes the mindset.
See, you really do get into subspace.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
again, to clarify what subspace is, this is like a mental frame of mine, which is basically kind of worshipful and obedient to the master. So if you've heard of master-slave things, you know, that dynamic actually it kind of has a life of its own. It's like once you get into that, and I suspect that one of the things that's really, really great about subspace, which is about giving your control over to somebody else, again, in a pre-negotiated, very safe environment. You don't want to give control over to, you know, some egomaniac. But I think it's because of the freedom of having to make decisions. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, I really do enjoy it.
What does that feel like, Patrick, giving up control?
Well, the kind of job that I have, I have a relatively high level, management position in a company, and my job is controlling things. I mean, literally, and getting people to do things that need to be done. And, you know, there's a lot of stress in that. And so the idea that, I can literally give up all control. I don't have to decide a thing because the mistress is deciding everything for me. And I've been in spaces before where she's, you know, I'm truly in a slave mental frame of mind where I am asking the mistress permission to do everything. And it is so freeing that I don't have to make a single decision. All the thinking of what is going to happen with me or what I'm going to do is in the hands of the other person, and it is incredibly freeing. You know, I wouldn't mind trying, you know, like a weekend of subservience. And I got to tell listeners out there, especially the men, I'm no wimp. You know, so this idea that if you're a man and you really like to do the subservient thing, well, you're just a wimp is about the farthest thing from the truth. I didn't get to where I was at work by being a wimp. But that idea that somebody else is controlling me, everything I do, whether I sit down, whether I can talk to another person, always I have to get permission from my mistress. And it hasn't happened that often when I've been able to do this. But it's just, I'll tell you something very short. When I was at a workshop and, at the break, they said, okay, you got to team up with somebody, and they gave us roles. And so, my role was the submissive Republican. And so the other person, another person's role was, she was bossy. And I went up to her and I said, would you allow me to be your slave? And she just looked at me and she said, well, why should I do that? And I looked her right in the eye and I said, because I will do everything you tell me to do. And I tell you what, it was a wild experience for that hour of lunch.
Sure it was.
Oh, I mean, we both got into our roles. It was the day of the gay pride parade, and you know, this idea that, you know, I'm a Republican, you know, living in San Francisco, I'm quite liberal, and nothing against Republicans, but it's like talking about taking a counter role, you know. It's hilarious.
Well, we're about out of time, but I want to, first of all, just to say that I posted something, one final comment here on Facebook, and both Sammy Phillips and Patrick Luke McLaughlin, thank you so much, guys, for giving this comment the thumbs up. What I said was middle-aged sex might include Tantra and or BDSM. Certainly sex is a journey which should never stop but continue to get better with years. And, Patrick, I'd say you are living proof that that is not only possible, but, something that's obviously keeping you a very happy, emotionally balanced person.
Well, if you had told me 20 years ago that I would be doing this, and I would say, you are just out of your mind, you know. And living in San Francisco has a lot to do with it. It's a very permissive community. If I were doing this in Wichita, Kansas, it might be a little bit harder.
Patrick, this is why we call this the shame-free zone.
Right.
We know that people are not encouraged to pursue their own bliss and their own truth. And
right.
That's what the shame-free zone is all about, is giving people license to be happy and to be whole.
Right.
And
well, shame is toxic.
Yes, shame is toxic.
Shame is toxic.
I want to thank you so much for joining me here in the Shame Free Zone. I hope you'll come back.
Well, I'd love to, and I've enjoyed being on, and thank you very much.
Hey, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and go give that girlfriend of yours a foot rub.
I'm going off to pick her up right now.
You guys have a great time.
All right. Thank you very much, Veronica.
All right. Good night.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.
Sering kesepian.